to be able to express Hakara Satov and to try to articulate just a little bit in the time that we have the great admiration and the deep affection I felt personally for Rabbi Lam, Nachum Ben Shmuel Lam Zecharno Levracha, who was our president and chancellor, but more important, for this gathering, the Rosh Yeshiva and the Nasi of Yeshiva Aser Ben Yitzchak Elchanan for 3 decades. But of course, my function tonight is not only personal, but primarily also as a representative, together with Rav Willig and Rabbi Schachter, of other members of the faculty of the yeshiva, for whom Rabbi Lam meant so much. In 15 minutes, it's obviously impossible to even begin. Rabbi Lam had great affection, great inclination and propensity for Torah Sasod. He did so much work on Hasidus and even Rav Chaim Mivolozhin and the Gra and their propensity for Kabbalah. But it would take Herculean powers of Koach HaTzimtzum to be able to accomplish very much in the 15 minutes. So what I would like to do is simply identify some of the Rashi Prakim that are particularly relevant to our B'nai Yeshiva who have an insufficient awareness of the tremendous obligation that they have to appreciate Rabbi Lam. They derive enormous
do me a favor, just send, I can't, I don't want to, legacy, just, I don't want to forget the
from his contribution.
Send me a text and say that.
And as such, to the extent that they can get to know his legacy and his works and his passions better, then this evening will have accomplished its goal. Ot chazon lamoed, I hope there'll be other opportunities with more than 15 minutes for the opportunity for a broader assessment and appreciation of this really giant of our community's broader career, his persona, his intellectual and spiritual, and his communal contributions and legacy. So let me begin by just making a comment. Typically, in prestigious universities, when they appoint a president, in some cases, prestigious yeshivot, when they appoint a Rosh Yeshiva, they select someone who is well-known, has great stature, a person of accomplishment, who has contributed a seminal perspective to the field, whether it be in the university world or the yeshiva world. At that point, once he becomes the head of the institution, the crushing burdens that that includes, fundraising, being a spokesman, administration, worrying about the scaffolding and the infrastructure, trying to enhance that infrastructure for others, that becomes his kind of second career, and it is what defines that next part of his life. Often, the scholar in question or the Talmud Chacham in question, you know, will look back or maybe in some cases look forward and bemoan, you know, the fact that he
was forced
to either leave the Beis Medrash or the halls of the academy, as the case may be. But the halachic perspective on leadership is, of course, fundamentally different. The concept of leadership in the halacha can be summed up very briefly by the psukim in the beginning of this week's parsha, Parshas Palosa. Chazal tell us that Aaron HaKohen was a bit disillusioned and disappointed. He had just witnessed the Chanukas Hanasiim, something which he was left out for. And the Rabbanu Shlalom, in order to assuage his concerns, told him, Chayacha shalcha gedola mishalahem, sha'ata madlik umetiv es haminorah. And in some versions of the Medrash, it's also added that his legacy will be l'dore doros, Lanetzach, it'll be a permanent legacy, while that of the Nesiim, of course, only depends on the period where the Beis HaMikdash is actually functioning. Without going into the detail, which we don't have time for, what's particularly striking is that the menorah obviously represents, in Jewish terms, Talmud Torah, and particularly Torah Shebaal Peh, And it accentuates creativity and greatness in Torah. And yet, the term that the Medrash uses, based on Torah Shebaal Peh and the range of different psukim that talk about this topic, is madlik umetiv, metiv umadlik. The truth is that metiv hatavas aneiros refers to the facilitating role of enhancing other people's, or enhancing the process, investing in the infrastructure so that the hadlaka will be brighter and more robust. Whereas the hadlaka, of course, focuses on the act itself. And here we have a very fascinating perspective phenomenon that emerges, especially if you look at the Rambam's formulation in the Chasmid and Musafim, while he, in the Koteret, formulates the mitzvah lahadlik as aneiros. In his discussion of this in Hilchos Tmidim, he back and forth veers between hatava, hadlaka, dishun, but especially hadlaka and hatava. There's no opportunity to quote in this context. You'll have to take my word for it. The Rambam has an extremely unusual shita, as Anosa Kalim point out. His view is that hatava and hadlaka are one mitzvah. And even then, within the Rambam, if you look at different statements as he formulates them, you would get the impression that it's hadlaka, you'd get the impression that it's hatava. Mostly you get the impression that it is the integration of the two. When it comes to Jewish leadership, the ideal is a madlik, somebody who has creative capacity, who's a Talmid Chacham, who has substance to contribute to the Jewish community, but at the same time, he's also the one who is in charge of the infrastructure. He is the most appropriate person to preside over the enhancement, the furthering of the institution and of the modalities that in the end produce not only his own work, but the work of a school, a generation of Talmidei Chachamim. Being meitiv and madlik, being madlik and meitiv, is the special hallmark of Jewish leadership. And the truth is that Rabbi Lam was a magnificent embodiment, an exemplar of all of this. He presided over, he was the administrative head of, he was the spokesman for the yeshiva and the university for all those decades. But at the same time, and this is important for Talmidim to appreciate, his output, scholarly output, was astonishing, in some respects greater than the period that preceded it. Notwithstanding, and maybe because of the crushing burden of running the institution and the role that it played in the community, he needed to continue to be part of the Beis Midrash. He needed to continue to produce, and he did. A range of works, very eclectic and very singular to his own talents, interests, and personality. On Rabbi Chaim Mivolozhin, on Chassidus, on Torah Mada, Drush, sermons, obviously essays on contemporary issues, drushos, magnificent drushos, a whole range of different genres, all produced, even during this tkufa. I remember visiting him in his office after he completed his work on Chassidus, which he told me took him many decades, a very thorough, fascinating survey and analysis of the different schools of Chassidus. And I asked him, you know, how are you able to do this given the reality of your position, etc.? And basically what he told me was that he couldn't not do it, that it was who he was, it's what gave him chiyus. He was able to be the leader that he was because he continued to be the Talmud Chacham and the scholar that he was. And this really is something that characterizes his own self-image and carried through to his leadership. As a Talmud, Rabbi Lam was part of a very small, select, hand-picked group that were in the Rav Shir when the Rav had 18 or 20 or 25 Talmidim. My father was among that group as well. Rabbi Roth, Rabbi Tendler, the great Rabbanim who, together with the Rav, triggered a renaissance of Jewish life based on idealism and following the Rav's guidance and asserting their own talents independently, but following his lead. Rabbi Lam was part of that special group, and even then he stood out in terms of his scholarship and in terms of his leadership abilities. He went on in the Rabbanus to make his mark, to be someone who not only was the editor of tradition, but again set a certain high standard for the rabbis of the time who were engaging this seemingly hopeless battle that ended up being a miraculous renaissance, again, under the leadership of the Rav, but with their own special nofech mishalahem, articulating eloquently and persuasively, compellingly, the story of halachic commitment and idealism. But I really want to focus on his time in the yeshiva. Rabbi Lam came to the yeshiva with a personal mesorah, the mesorah of his grandfather, Rav Boimel. He always used to speak about him with such fondness. He was obviously an inspirational figure in his life. Years later, Rabbi Lam exerted a lot of effort to make sure that his sefer would be included in the responsive project as a family legacy. And of course, his other Rebbe, the Rav Zatzal, who he looked to his whole life as somebody who set the standard for that kind of intellectual and integrity, somebody who was a master of the corpus on the one hand, and had the capacity to translate that into relevant language philosophically for the contemporary era. Rabbi Lam was a loyal grandson, and he was a loyal Talmud, and was somebody who perceived himself in that Mesorah, even as he went on to develop his own style, certainly, and something that he encouraged in others as well, a nofech mishalo, a style that was very different than I think either of those influences. But again, elu ve'elu, something that they certainly would have been proud of. As president, he had the formidable task of seeing a transition from a Rav Soloveitchik-centric yeshiva. The yeshiva was dominated by the colossal, you know, scholarship and persona of the Rav, Baruch Hashem. How could that continue to dominate and define the agenda of the yeshiva, intellectually, spiritually, communally, even as the figure of the Rav himself became weaker? The Rav was a gibor, he kept coming in, but already his strength was waning, and then, of course, from the time that he was no longer able to teach, and after that. Rabbi Lam, together with his partner in the yeshiva, Rabbi Chalap Shlita, who played a very significant role in this as well, managed that transition in magnificent fashion to create from, again, a yeshiva which completely flowed to one dominant personality, to create options for different personalities, all Talmidim of the Rav, to maintain the cohesion of the yeshiva on the one hand, as at the same time offering individuals room to grow, room to develop their own personality and style, and therefore the option of being mamid Talmidim, which is exactly what took place. Part of that formula was the foresight to develop a Kolel Elyon, which was Rabbi Lam, and together with Rabbi Chalap, in terms of implementation, that was the dream. Rabbi Lam often told me very wistfully how much he would have appreciated the opportunity himself to continue learning an extra few years, to hone his skills, to take extra steps in a framework which was conducive to it. And he had great appreciation, great understanding for the impact that a Kolel Elyon would have, not only on the young Talmidei Chachamim who would have the opportunity to grow and to become future leaders, but also on the rest of the yeshiva as role models, as a presence in the Beis Din, in the Beis Medrash, and as individuals who would take roles in the community you know, which would be enhanced by their extra limud. Rabbi Lam took a very, very active role in cultivating the development of the Grus Kollel. I happen to have been the first person who was asked to be in that Kollel. In those days, we didn't interview, we were asked. And then in the reconstitution of the Kollel Elyon, when the Grus money was no longer available, in the Wexner and the Baron Kollel, myself and Rabbi Willig serve in the functions of Rosh Kollel, and Rabbi Lam's role in cultivating and developing and enhancing these kollelim has had huge impact on the entire yeshiva. In the context of that reiteration of the kollel, it was also established that the Chevrei HaKollel would meet on a regular basis several times a month on Thursday afternoon with Rabbi Lam, either directly or he would join with them to expose them to other personalities in the Jewish community. This was his way of developing a kesher with and having impact on some of the elite Talmidei Chachamim that grew in our Beis Medrash. And that's something which I think was really a very important development for the yeshiva, as well as something which he took pride in and had great sipuk hanefesh from, and some of the relationships that grew out of that were extremely significant as well. Beyond that, Rabbi Lam felt tremendous sense of pride in what it is that the institution's mission was and its ideological framework. He felt that Torah Mada had just become a neglected slogan at a certain point, taken for granted. It was he, out of a sense of passion and a sense of mission, who decided to explore programmatically, communally, and really to kind of push Torah Mada to a different level. At a certain point, we were having regular Torah Mada shiurim and lectures, and of course a journal was created, all sorts of frameworks for it, both of which I think have enriched our understanding. He pushed for an eclectic and wide-ranging understanding of that philosophy, something that requires a much greater discussion. In the end, you know, k'shem she'mekablin schar al adrisha, kach mekablin schar al aprisha, he also knew when the right time had come, you know, to pull back a little bit, but that reflected, again, his sense of pride, his view that the ideology of the yeshiva is a lechatchila, that it is not a compromise. And this, of course, also pushed him to kind of rename, I don't know whether it was his coining or just that he appreciated it, but Rabbi Lam was very unhappy with the term modern orthodoxy. He felt that modern was too relativist a term, that it limited the scope of the ideology to particular a time era and had a connotation of being compromise or a concession. Instead, he pushed the idea, or the phraseology at least, of centrist orthodoxy, by which he meant an inclusiveness, a foundation which is common to all of Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. But at least in my absorbing of the idea and the concept, and I too prefer centrist far more to modern, also reflects El Mul Pnei HaMenorah of the very same menorah that we spoke of before. Chazal tell us that all of the six lights on the Kanei HaMenorah were basically not part of the Chefs HaShem menorah. Only the one in the middle, the one with centrifugal gravitational force, my terminology, but I think it reflects the basic idea, only that is truly part of the essence and the chefza of Torah itself. The others are enhancements, this version and that version, but the core and the essence lies in the center. That is what binds the rest of the community. Not a concession, but a focus on the stable factor, the factor around which everything else revolves. We tilt towards the middle nair in the menorah, in Torah Shebaal Peh. So whether it was centrism or Torah Mada, Rabbi Lam expressed and formulated great pride, sense of lechatchila, and the ideology of the institution, and tried to transmit that and to convey that through the Rabbeim and through his own lectures to the Talmidim of the yeshiva. In the end of the day, his presence in the Beis Medrash, you know, in a bigger sense, he wasn't learning in the Beis Medrash, although there was a time when he was doing that a little bit as well, really did define the essence of who he was. One year I got a call from Rabbi Lam in the end of the summer. It was a year in which the yeshiva was supposed to learn a Perek HaShaleach and HaNizakin. And he had the proposal for me. He told me that he always had wanted to give a regular shiur, but didn't have the time. He still didn't have the time, not to prepare, not to give. But he knew that I didn't give shiurim typically on Wednesday, and wondered whether or not what I thought of an arrangement of him giving shiur every Wednesday in my shiur on the topics of Tikkun Olam in the Mishnayos in the end of HaShaleach and Perek HaNizakin. The Kachava. It didn't happen every week because his schedule was crushing and didn't allow for it. But many times in each semester, Rabbi Lam came into my shiur that year and spoke about the topics of Tikkun Olam, a particular interface between philosophy, social justice, and hardcore halacha, which was a topic which always fascinated him. In my opinion, his effectiveness as a fundraiser and as a communal leader were partly due to the fact that donors, even if they didn't have a background, understood implicitly that he was a man of learning and scholarship, stature, that was his passion was for ideas. That gravitas is something which impressed them and in turn pushed them, motivated them to support the institution. Every year, Rabbi Lam would give a shiur in the yard side of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, also in memory of Dr. Belkin, which concluded with what he used to call, I think, quoting Rabbi Belkin, the sachakol, the summary, the sachakol in the end. But again, the yearly shiur that he gave was one which was meticulously prepared. It was masterfully organized. There was a clarity of ideas, and his own very unique blend of the integration of halacha and hashkafa. Many of those addresses found their way in a sefer that he put out, Halachos v'Halichos, which he told me, and this was repeated at the Hespedim by one of the grandsons, he felt he wrote particularly in memory of his grandfather, Rav Baumel. My time is up. So let me just conclude by saying that Rav Lam, of course, leaves a huge legacy, beginning with his family, extending out to all of the various modalities that he was involved with and that he helped to transform the rabbinate, the Jewish community, but particularly in our yeshiva, programmatically, personally, as a paradigm, and as an inspiration. Mishalahem, Chayecha shelcha gedola mishalahem, sha'ata madlik umeitiv es ha-menorah. In the end of the day, it's el mul p'nei ha-menorah, el mul ner ha-imtza'i she'ena bakanim, el beguf shel ha-menorah. Rabbi Lam was somebody who was meitiv and madlik, madlik and meitiv, and he will be sorely missed in our yeshiva, but he will be remembered as his legacy is great. Thank you.
Hi, good evening to all of you. It is a great honor and a privilege for me to have the opportunity to say a few words in honor of Dr. Lam, Reb Nachum b'Reb Shmuel Tzvi, and to do so in the company of Rabbi Rosenzweig and Rabbi Willig, both of whom continue to play such a very substantial role in the yeshiva that was so centrally important for Dr. Lam. There's so much that could be said, as you already heard. Dr. Lam was a rabbi, pulpit rabbi, was a scholar, was the only one who got both smicha and a PhD under the tutelage and mentorship of the Rav. He was a university president, and he was also a university savior. I remember in the early 80s, YU was in big trouble, and he actually saved the institution. He rolled up his sleeves, learned finances, and was able to do what he needed in order to make sure that the university would continue to function. He was an author who wrote an enormous amount of books and essays on issues of both academic as well as current interest. He was a public intellectual. He had a way with language. He was clever and quick-witted and very sharp. He had a tremendous sense of humor, a formidable Talmud Chacham, a brilliant speaker, and the relevance of his sermons continue to astound us as we read them even more than 60 years later. I realize that there are many adults who are on this program. The program is specifically geared for the Talmidei HaYeshiva, and we're certainly thrilled and happy that so many of you who are no longer or have not been Talmidei HaYeshiva have joined us. But I would like to extrapolate a few principles that I found to be worthy of analysis and a quick discussion specifically for the Talmidei HaYeshiva. So I'm speaking to the boys in the Beis Medrash. This is the end of Night Seder. This is time when there's a Sichas Musar. This is now, we're now in the main Beis Medrash, and I'm speaking to the boys in the main Beis Medrash. And I've tried to extrapolate some messages very briefly that I would like to share with you, and whoever else wants to eavesdrop, by all means, please go ahead and do it. There are a few points that I would like to make, reflecting on the life of Dr. Lamb, that I think would be worthy of you to consider. Now, I know that you're young, and some of the things that I will say may not resonate with you immediately, but write them down or make a note somewhere in 15 years to go back and listen to the presentations this evening, and I hope you will find them worthwhile. First thing I want to point out is that Dr. Lamb had respect for those with whom he disagreed. We're living in a very contentious culture right now, not only in America, but all over the world. And very quickly, we condemn others who we don't agree with. We live in an echo chamber. And I really think it's important for the Talmidim and the Yeshiva to understand that to have respect for an opinion that you disagree with is not a sign of weakness, but it's a sign of strength. I want to give you one example, not such a well-known example. In the fall of 1971, Dr. Lamb published an article in Tradition called The Ideology of the Naturei Karta. He did an analysis of the Satmar Rebbe's radical, radical anti-Zionist ideology. And he writes a pretty substantial article, The Ideology of the Naturei Karta According to the Satmar Version. And towards the end of the article, he writes the following. Clearly, we're dealing here with a fringe group that in its extremism, its hyperbolic language, its extravagance and simplism reveals a psychological pattern of defensiveness. Yet its fierce independence, listen to this sentence, he's talking about the Satmar. He had no love lost for the Satmar ideology, for the Satmar anti-Zionist, rabid anti-Zionist Naturei Karta ideology. Yet its fierce independence of thought, its refusal to be outvoted on matters of principle, the courage of its convictions and the coherency of its ideology cannot but elicit our admiration. Courage, especially idealistic courage, expressed at great personal sacrifice is so rare that even if we disagree with its thesis, it deserves our respect. So here we have 1971, Dr. Lamb, modern Orthodox rabbi, later to become a centrist Orthodox rabbi, taking on the Satmara ideology, trying to understand it, and giving some yashikayach where he felt it was due. The response was not long in coming, and two issues later in the letters to the editor, there was a very sharp letter, absolutely excoriating Dr. Lamb. How dare he? How dare he ruin a beautiful article by concluding with some expression of admiration or courage for the Satmara? Since when, writes the letter, the author of the letter, does sheer hooliganism with complete disregard for one's fellow man go under the heading of courage? And then he goes on to say even more extreme things, actually outrageous things that I don't even want to quote. And this is published as a letter to the editor. Dr. Lamb responds, and I want to tell maybe how yeshiva to understand, not just the language of the response, because that's also important, that Dr. Lamb spent a lot of time crafting his language, which is also an art that is overlooked today. Today, there is so much more emphasis placed on content rather than style. And it's crucially important for you as you grow up and take your places, either as lay leaders or as professional leaders within the Jewish community, to understand that the way you present, not just what you present, is extraordinarily important, but also the mindset here, the graciousness. I cannot say, this is the beginning of his response, that I did not expect this kind of backlash as a result of the misreading of my article. Still, the name of the person who wrote this letter, comparisons are invidious, his characterizations insidious, and I incredulous that I'm being labeled as an apologist for Satmar. He goes ahead and says, I have tremendous bona fides. I am a Zionist. I recognize the state of Israel. I give money to UJA. I recite Hallel on Yom HaTzmaut. I admire Golda Meir. And when in Israel, I don't throw stones on Shabbos, not even on weekdays. But I also do not throw verbal stones at anyone with whom I disagree. And he teaches us something fundamentally important. Lesson number one. You could disagree with somebody, and you will disagree with somebody. But that doesn't mean that you excoriate them, and it doesn't mean that you demonize them. And he taught us that. There was a dignity. There was an elegance. There was tremendous wisdom. Next lesson. He took stands. He was militant. He was really militant about what later he coined the phrase centrist orthodoxy. And he was very concerned about the fact that in Yeshiva University, the morning was Valashin and the afternoon was Harvard. And there wasn't really being done, not enough on campus to try to help bring these worlds together, to help the Talmidei HaYeshiva, both uptown as well as in Stern College, to understand what does it mean to be in an institution whose motto is Torah Umada. And I was serving then as the rabbi of the Jewish Center. I was his successor after one as the rabbi of that shul on the Upper West Side. He invited me to become the first director, the founding director of the Torah Umada project. This was really important to him. And you heard from Rabbi Rosenzweig, there were lectures, we had Torah Umada fellows, we had club hour presentations, and we had a journal. And I brought for show and tell the first issue of the Torah Umada Journal, and particularly because in this first issue of the Torah Umada Journal, there's an article entitled Personal Initiative and Creativity in Avodas Hashem by Rabbi Michael Rosenzweig, and there's an article entitled Secular Studies Are They for Everyone by Rabbi Mordechai Willig, and this is 1989. These were originally club hour presentations, oral Torah Shebaal Peh. I invited them to turn it into Torah Shebichsav, and it made its way into the first issue of the Torah Umada Journal. This was extremely important to him. Dr. Lamb took stands and made things happen, and his strongly expressed convictions did not necessarily meet with full support even within the yeshiva, but he felt strongly about it, and he stuck to his guns, and he felt certainly outside of the yeshiva strong feelings and expressions did not meet necessarily always with full support by the broad spectrum of the totality of the Orthodox community. But I admired him because he took a stand. It's very easy, Talmidei HaYeshiva, Tayira Talmidim, it's easy to sit back and say it's Yenim's problem. It's easy to sit back and say, Vosep is me, why me, who am I, what am I going to do, what kind of a difference am I going to make? And then the world goes on and the world goes on and that's how you get this and that's it. But I'm inviting you, I'm asking you to take a lesson from a master communal leader, who had respect for those with whom he disagreed. And he also took a tremendous stance when he felt that it was necessary, and he felt it was necessary many times. And it's not necessarily popular, but it's important. And if you feel it's important, then you should go for it. You have to do it with seichel, you have to do it with wisdom, as he did. But don't be a nechba la kelim. Go out and do something. The next point that I want to make is preparation. He really prepared. I remember, I mentioned to you that I followed him as a rabbi of the shul When I came, I was a young rabbi. He had been the rabbi for 17 years. So for the first couple of years, besides asking Rabbi Dr. Leo Young, who was our senior rabbi, so they asked Dr. Lamb to be Misar Kedushin. So I would stand next to him under the chuppah, and they'd ask him to speak, and he would pull out an index card under the chuppah, and he would have notes. And it wouldn't just be one index card. So you'll think, Vosep is past, that Dr. Norman Lamb, the master orator, enochinami, that's exactly the point. Prepare, show respect for your audience. Don't just come in and wing it. Never, ever did he do that. He carefully crafted, even just what I read to you a moment ago, the alliterations. He had a thesaurus behind his desk all the time. Give attention, I'm asking you, Talmidei HaYeshiva, give attention not just to what you say, which is crucially important, but also give attention to how you say it. You know, Talmidei HaYeshiva think, nah, it doesn't really matter. It's the ikar is the tamtzis, the ikar is the chakira, and of course it is. But you will be so much more successful. And what you say will be so much more respected. And it will be so much more makubo if you say it with elegance and if you say it with sophistication. So the first point is respect for those whom you disagree with. The second point is take a stand. The third point is prepare. The last point that I want to make is care about family. Care about family. Dr. Lamb, as you heard, and as I'm sure you'll hear from Rabbi Willie, gave himself b'lei v'nefesh for the yeshiva, and not just for the yeshiva, but for so many values and causes that were centrally important to him. But his family was incredibly important, children and grandchildren. The Rambam tells us the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, did you ever wonder, Pasuk says, that's a nefesh asher asa b'charan, how many were there? How many people were the nefesh asher asa b'charan? The Rambam says that sh'niskat zo'elav alofim u'revavos, tens of thousands of people, when he looked back and he saw Asara and Lot, that is called Rechusha Mesher Rechoshu, and he saw Sanefesh Asher Osa Becharan, thousands of people. And the question is, what happened to them? Where did they go with the rest of the Torah? What's the Nitzchias for Avraham Avinu? The Nitzchias is Ki Beyitzchak Yikaris of Lechazar. So my last point is, of course, you have to be Mersa Nefesh for the community. You'll be rabbis, you'll be teachers, you'll be lay leaders, you'll be professionals, you'll care about the Jewish community, you'll invest in the Jewish, of course you'll do that. And that's super important, but not at the expense of your family. I tell my students all the time, don't slaughter your children on the altar of the Jewish community. And Dr. Lamb taught us that. So I conclude this multifaceted Renaissance, unbelievable human being, leader of Klal Yisrael, taught us respect for those with whom we disagree, taught us to take stands, taught us to prepare and not to be embarrassed to pull out an index card under a chuppah, and taught us the power of family. We miss him greatly. We remember him fondly and with deep, deep respect. Harav Nochem Reb Shmuel Tzvi, Tehei Nishmaso Tzrur Rabbi Tzrur HaChai.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schachter. Cover Rabbi Willie.
Thank you, Eitan. I would like to focus this evening on the final words of Megillas Esther. We're describing a great leader as with the following phrases: Gadol la Yehudim, great for the Jews, v'rotzui l'rov echav, accepted by the majority of his brothers, Doresh Tov Li'amo, seeking the welfare of his people, V'dover Shalom L'chol Zaro, and speaking peace for all of his descendants. Let us focus on these phrases, four phrases, in the context of describing, albeit very briefly, Rabbi Lamb, Zichrono Livracha. The Targum says on the words, Gadol La'Yehudim, Gizbaraya V'saba de Yehudoi, the treasurer and the elder of the Jewish people, umisof alma at sofa ishtama leishame, and from one end of the world to the other, his name was well known. Rabbi Lamb, Zichrono Livracha, as you heard briefly, was a gizbar, was a treasurer. He's the individual who took our yeshiva from near bankruptcy, from a terrible debt of tens of millions of dollars, which meant a lot in those days, to an endowment of over $1 billion. And he did it himself. He was well known as a consummate fundraiser. But he's also well known, as the Targum says, not only within the institution as the Gadol HaYehudim, but also his name was known Misofa Olam Vatsofa, from one end of the world till the other. He was a leader of the Jewish people throughout the United States and even as far as Israel and the rest of the world as well. However, and it's always a however, as he said himself, the fundraising efforts took the majority of his time, certainly in the early years. And therefore, at that point in time, his involvement in the community and the establishment and functioning and thriving of our yeshiva came at the expense of his own spiritual growth. And as a result, the next phrase, V'rotzui l'rov echov, accepted by the majority of his people, of his brothers. Says the Gemara Megillat HaZayin, Pirshu mimenu mixas Sanhedrin. Part of the Sanhedrin separated themselves from him. They weren't happy. They weren't happy with him. He should have been learning Torah and not be involved in Tzorchei Tzibur. But, and here I quote from the beautiful collection Me'am Loes, a famous collection. Yes, he felt, in contrast to the people in the Sanhedrin with whom he disagreed, that no, Tzorchei Tzibur is more important. It's more important. It's very, and we should realize that he did not back out, did not back down, just because Pirshu Mimenu Mixas Sanhedrin. And the fascinating aside, here in the same paragraph in Me'am Loes, he explains an alternative interpretation, why they were upset with him, not because he was to sacrifice his own learning, but rather, and I quote, Shelo rotzu sheyilmadu mikan sheyesh lilmod chokhmas ha'amim. They did not want that people should learn from his example as a requirement to study the wisdom of the people, presumably a prerequisite towards the type of communal leadership that he exhibited as someone who was a Mishnah l'melech HaChashverosh, and they didn't want that to happen. What an amazing echo we have in today's world when the part of the Sanhedrin, perhaps primarily the Sanhedrin, not within our own yeshiva, who were also opposed that there was Yesh Lilmod Chochmas HaAmim, but he didn't back down, as you heard from the previous speakers, was part of his very, very driven mission in life. And here we go to the next step. Again, quoting from the Me'am Loes, that these individuals who opposed him, and he held his position was right, quote, V'lo nimnu chachamim lomar data makadosha, shelo hoyer tzorech lasik v'melachas ele b'torah. They didn't stop to express their opinions. Even though, quote, Bivadai kavanos ohoiso l'shem shemayim ulefi hadin. Yes, there was opposition, both within the yeshiva and beyond the yeshiva. Perhaps the difference of the two oppositions was, whatever opposition was within the yeshiva, we understood. Bivadai kavanos ohoiso l'shem shemayim ulefi hadin. That was not necessarily appreciated with the Mixas Sanhedrin that was beyond the walls of our yeshiva. But as you heard, Rabbi Lam did not respond in kind. Whatever critiques were leveled, and sometimes they were quite fierce, from what we'll call the right wing, he was silent. And in his silence, he followed the example of his great Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, who suffered similarly from these same types of slings and arrows. However, in the next interpretation, we understand the Rotzi L'Rov Echov in a totally different light. Why Rotzi L'Rov Echov? Because, listen carefully, Neshemochicham Binyane Shamayim, that he gave strong Musa rebuke b'inyanei shamayim in spiritual matters. In spiritual matters. Here we have the example of Rabbi Lam doing exactly the same thing, both within the yeshiva and without, excoriating individuals who didn't live up to what he felt were very important and timeless religious standards. He was quite articulate and quite forceful in his critique of what he called the then known as modern orthodoxy. And indeed, in his famous inaugural lecture about centrist orthodoxy, over and above his printed article in Tradition a year or two before, he pointed out many weaknesses in the modern or centrist orthodox camp. Not enough commitment to the study of Torah, not enough enthusiasm in spiritual causes and needs, an overemphasis on the mundane and the financial. He didn't mince words. And you could imagine the forceful denunciation of those who did not even subscribe to any brand of orthodoxy. And as a result, explains the Me'am Lo'ways, was Rosu Lerov Echov, not only forgive the expression, there were those on the right, the Mikzah Sanhedrin, the Perishim Menu, but there were those on the left who did not appreciate the Musa that he gave them. But he gave them in what spirit? Of Doresh Tov Li'amo. He knew what was ultimately good for them. Doresh Tovasam Ha'amitis, what was really good for them. This was his legacy. Didn't respond to the right, didn't respond to the left. He was firm in his own positions, suffered slings and arrows from both sides, and maintained his position in the center. And we come to the phrase again of Doresh Tov Li'amo. There's in the literal translation, it means Doresh Tov, he was sought what was good for his people. But of course, we know that in today's parlance, the word Doresh relates to the word Derusha. And Rabbi Lam was a master darshan. In his own words, even after he retired from the active rabbinate, an unrepentant darshan, because he understood the critical importance of what a drasha can mean. He was the premier, peerless darshan of his time. When you wanted to hear an important drasha about a particularly important matter at the time, the address was Rabbi Norman Lam. Fortunately for us, these drashos were copied, typed by himself on Motzei Shabbos usually, and ultimately emerged in a permanent form, which I'll describe momentarily. But the last phrase has a double entendre. The last phrase is V'dover Shalom L'chol Zaro. He sought the peace and the welfare of all of his descendants. And as Rabbi Schachter correctly anticipated, I would emphasize this point, family first. Family first. I'm speaking again to Talmidim. You will, mit Hashem, many of you go out to important roles of leadership, but in the rabbinic world, the world of chinuch, or lay leadership, please remember family first. In a different form, I pointed to the fact that Rabbi Schachter also wrote in one of his articles, Rabbi Lam's license plate. The people on this Zoom came after Rabbi Lam's period. His license plate on his car said CJSSL, which stood for Chaya Josh Shalom Sarah Lam. Every time he walked into his car, we had so much business to take care of, crushing burdens and financial responsibilities. What faced him as he was about to walk in was his family, because family was first. However, and this is my concluding portion, what does Rashi say? L'chol Zaro Musav al Amo, L'chol Zera Amo. Not only was he Dover Shalom to his direct descendants, but he was a Dover Shalom, he pronounced important proclamations. L'chol Zaro, his descendants, means the descendants of his people, which talks about a lasting legacy. Descendants of his people. This, I believe, is perhaps the most important point. Because I'm talking to Talmidim. Talmidim were not members of his family, nor were they students in the yeshiva during his presidency. Please remember the tremendous debt of gratitude that you owe to Rabbi Lam for his influence, which continues for generations. The book to which I referred earlier is called Drashot Lidorot. As we heard earlier, even though they were given a particular time context going back to the 1950s, nonetheless, their impact remains current. Indeed, a nevuah nitzricha ledoros nichtava, the expression of the Gemara Masechta Megillah Yudalev. And therefore, you as a Talmidim have to continue this legacy with a proper recognition of gratitude of HaKoras HaTov. And so we conclude, as Rabbi Lam often did, with a prayer. The prayer is that our yeshiva shall be successful, Lidoros, for generations. And you, the Talmidim, who came after his retirement, shall continue to learn, not only from his written works, which are masterful. I have a number of young rabbis in my own family, and they tell me that they consult with Drashot Lidorot frequently, and they find pearls of wisdom, which they are now using in their drashos. I'm so excited that the connection of my family to Rabbi Lam, which goes back many decades, I should say, long before he became president of our yeshiva, is continuing in this fashion. I hope that all of you will follow his example of being involved in Torah. His first love was Torah, Talmud Torah on a very high level, which he experienced both in Torah Vadas with his grandfather and in our yeshiva, primarily with the Rav, Soloveitchik. And yes, with Tzorachei Tzibur, when he, like the great leader described at the end of the Megillah, gave up on his intellectual pursuits, on his Talmud Torah to a great extent, in order to be involved in Tzorachei Tzibur, in the needs of the community, the yeshiva and the community beyond, as we believe, the Kavana L'Shem Shammai. I'd like to make one final slight correction to Rabbi Lam's name, as it was mentioned by my two colleagues. If you're paying careful attention, they said it a little differently from one another, but they were both not precise, the Mechila, because I knew Rabbi Lam on a personal level. He used to come visit us in Camp Morashah. We called him to the Torah in a certain way, and that's how he was called at the Kelmole that we all attended last week. His real name was Nachum ben Meir Shmuel. I repeat, Nachum ben Meir Shmuel. And I want to end with a Rosh HaTevis, if you will. Rabbi Lam, as we know, he wrote a book, Torah Umada, but he also wrote his PhD on Torah Lishma. Torah Lishma, in the works of Rabbi Chaim Volozhin and his contemporaries, and the idea of Torah Lishma of Rabbi Chaim Volozhin was continued by the Chofetz Chaim, and the Chofetz Chaim writes explicitly what the Nefesh HaChaim says implicitly, that the entire Torah is a mashal for the Ribbono Shel Olam. Look in the Chofetz Chaim's Shem Olam, he refers to the expression mashal akadmoni, a phrase found in Sefer Shmuel, quoted by Rashi in Parshas Mishpatim, on the pasuk Volokim Ina Liyado, Merishom Yetzei Resha, that the Torah is the mashal akadmoni, which is referred to in Sefer Shmuel, the Torah itself. A mashal for what? For whom? For whom? For what? The answer is that the Torah is a mashal kiviyachol for the Rabbono Shel Olam himself. The Torah is the mashal, and the Rabbono Shel Olam is the nimshal. And the nimshal is Rosh HaTevis, Nochem Rav Meir Shmuel Lam. And now that Nochem Rav Meir Shmuel Lam has gone up to meet the Nimshel, to meet the Rabbono Shel Olam in that other world, in that great world. I call upon you, you Talmidim, the beneficiaries of all his hard work, both in Torah and in Tzorchei Tzibur, which was done the Shem Shemayim, to continue to benefit from his influence and do positive things in your own Torah, in your own Tzorchei Tzibur. And by doing that, you will enhance an Elias Neshama. As the Mefarshim point out, that a person is judged in this world and is judged subsequently in the next world, either on a yard site or on Yom Kippur. And the question is asked, well, why is he being judged again? Can't do anything good or bad in that world. The answer is, well, those whom you influenced, if they continue to do good things, that accrues to your benefit. I implore that all the Talmidei HaYeshiva do good things in Torah and Tzorchei Tzibur, obviously for their own sake, but also they should be an Aliyah Neshama for Rav Nachum, for Rav Meir Shmuel, Zichrona Levracha. His Hashpah should continue forever. I would like to conclude with a Kel Mole, which is the appropriate way that any Askara is concluded in our own Beis Medrash. We are in effect in our Beis Medrash, so we will now make the Kel Mole. I will rise. You don't really have to because it's virtual, but I feel I want to rise in honor of Rabbi Lam to recite the Kel Mole. And we say, whenever we say a Kel Mole, Tehei Nishmasa Tzerura Bitzror HaChayim. El Mole Rachamim Shochein Bamiromim Hamtzei Menucho Nechono Al Kanfei HaShechino B'Malos Kidoshim Utorim Kizor HaRakia Masirim Es Nishmas Harav Nochum Ben Rav Meir Shmuel Sheholach Liolamo Ba'avur Shel Talmidei HaYeshiva Yidnu Litzvaka Paraskaras Nishmasa Vigan Eden Tehei Menuchasa Lachain Ba'al Rachamim Yastirei v'seisa kinafav li'olamim v'yitzror ha'im es nishmaso Adonai hu nachaloso v'yonuach v'shalom al mishkavo v'nomar Amen.